Dr. Homebrew is brought to you by Five Star Chemicals, providing safety and cleaning supplies for brewing, distilling, and winemaking at fivestarchemicals.com.
Doctor, look!
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Dr. Homebrew. The month is February. The time is now. The beers are sort of cold. And we're ready to go. Let's start this thing.
Let's go.
Okay.
We've got the two Bryans in the studio, and we have a handful of guests waiting online right now to talk to us, which if you can even imagine.
Do you want to talk to us?
Yeah, you can even imagine how that would be.
I can't imagine wanting to talk to us.
Neither can I, to be honest with you. We're going to have Colin on here in just a second, but I have to tell you guys, the people who bring you this show and every episode of Dr. Homebrew, Five Star Chemicals. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com, learn about everything you need to do to clean and to sanitize your equipment, your carboy, your rack and can, the little nooks and the ball valve, all the annoying stuff that you have to do to make actually good beer. Five Star helps you with that. And in fact, they're the best at it. So check them out, fivestarchemicals.com. If your local shop does not carry Five Star, ask them to. If they refuse, don't ever go there again because you know they don't get proper ingredients.
That's right.
Thank you, Five Star.
You know what I'm trying to say? Man, I'm tired. We're starting the show late. I'm like already just ready to go. Normally, we'd be halfway through the first show or even done with the first show. I'm toast, man.
You
that kid has got me.
No. I can like come over across the desk and slap you up a little bit. Would that help?
No, it would not help.
Ah, damn it.
What I need to do is just quit. My kid just rips the energy out of me, dude. It's so annoying. No one told me that. No one told me kids are going to be annoying.
Okay. Kids are kids. I love my daughter. She's awesome. She's almost 12.
Mm-hmm.
It gets better, man.
No, it doesn't get better. It gets different.
It gets different and
it gets
better.
Different.
It definitely gets different. You know what, man? Kids, she's worth it. Just power, power through it, bro.
How
power
much is she it. Worth? Because that's what I'm already ready to sell. I'm ready to get out.
In Chechnya, she is worth $200,000.
I'm going to move to Spain in 4 years and just leave. She's going to leave. I'm tired. But it's fine. You know what? Forget about it. We have beers. Let's just call Colin right now.
Christopher, right?
Colin.
Oh.
Nobody else got back to me.
The caller's
don't fuck
okay.
with me, Brian.
I thought.
Stop it.
Don't mess with me.
Don't confuse me.
You know.
We figured it out before, and now we have Christopher. Right. We have Colin. We don't know who we're talking
all the
to.
All
right
names.
Now.
Yeah.
The caller will be scintillating and wake your ass right up. You are going to be so on the second that we start talking to people. It's going to be crazy.
No.
I don't know what
yeah,
we got.
I'm
going to
fall asleep.
I organized the beers. Thanks to everybody for putting up with my long emails and stuff about beers.
You do have massively long emails.
I type
as much as Brian Schar likes to talk, you like to type.
My fingers are speedy.
Oh, just try shutting me up. And you guys have tried, and it just doesn't work.
So there you go. I'm just kidding.
We'll get
Colin on here in just a sec.
Can I talk about myself?
You sure can. Why do you sound terrible?
I don't know. It might
Why
be
do
this
you sound
mic again.
Bad?
I recently made Grandmaster 1.
Oh, nice.
Officially.
Congratulations,
well,
man.
With the refresh. I had the points for a while ago. So.
Here, you sound like shit. We're going to move microphones. I don't know what the hell's going on over here.
Sounds like last show where you had that problem.
Yeah, or you can sit over on Warren's.
Like far away from Brian.
Or far away from Brian. Whatever you want to do. Either you guys can just move down, like shift over, or you can move. But you sound terrible.
Whatever you want to do, man.
And I don't know why. I was just on that mic on Monday, and everything was fine. So, anyway. Colin, are you there, my friend?
Yes, sir, JP. How are you?
I'm good. Man, I don't know. Do you really want to know? Because I'll tell you.
I do.
Okay, well, I'm top. My knees are hurting. I got knee problems now. The microphone doesn't work. I'm tired and hungry, and we still have to do two stupid shows.
Oh man, sounds like you're on top of the death pool.
Shit, I'm on top of the kill this job pool. I don't know what that means. But how are you, man? We have a weird beer from you. Well, not a weird beer, but it's a weird story behind the beer. This is an Imperial Stout that Terrence, our friend Terrence, gave to me like 1,100 years ago.
Yes, yes.
And I told him not to do it. I'm just going to say that right now. I explicitly, verbatim, said, do not do this. Do not give me this beer. Do not take this beer from Colin. Do not absolutely 100% do this. And then he just dropped it off at my house one day. I'm like, well, this is why we haven't had you on. It's not me, it's Terrence.
I agree. 100% Terrence.
That's why we can't have nice things.
That's right. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself while Brian gets situated here in his new office.
I've never sat here before. This is weird.
Oh,
is weird.
Brian, I'm really far away from you, and I feel kind of alone and bereft.
Okay. You'll be all right, okay? Brian.
Actually, I'm kind of offended by the smell of my own sneakers today. I just
Colin, how long you been homebrewing, dude?
Oh, maybe five or 6 years, roughly.
Are you in a homebrew club?
I am not. I'm not. I've got two little ones, so
he's a lone wolf.
No, see,
you and far between.
Yeah, I feel you now, dude. I don't know how you're even awake right now.
What's that?
I don't even know how you're awake right now, man.
Yeah.
How old are you?
About an hour ago, so
that's
my free time.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's when you wake up.
All right, so this Imperial Stout. Have you brewed an Imperial Stout before? Is this your first run at it? Have you done it since this batch? What's happened?
That was my first run at it, and I have not done it since.
Okay, perfect. So we can potentially help you out a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I'm thinking about doing it again.
Oh, excellent. Hey, man, perfect timing. Look at this. Oh, Brian's reaching for his beer. All right, so Brian will pour me a little bit of beer, I imagine, is what's happening, hopefully. And then we'll go through. Brian Schar, since you have some beer in front of you already, would you like to start talking to Colin about his Imperial Stout, please?
I would love to chat with you about your Imperial Stout, Colin. I really enjoyed this beer from an aroma standpoint. Really was a rich chocolate malt. Definitely a chocolate-focused beer here. Really, it's I like to brew stouts, and I like mine to be chocolatey and chocolate-focused. So I definitely, from a personal standpoint, really appreciated this beer. It's low roast, a hint of alcohol. Definitely could tell there was Imperial, but it wasn't harsh, not fusely. I almost got a little bit of a bourbon character out of the aroma with a little bit of vanilla. No hops, no esters or phenols, no diacetyl. The alcohol was sweet. Gave it 10 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Colors, really dark brown. Clear as far as you can tell when in clarity in a beer this dark. And had a low and persistent head. Flavor, first impression, just like the aroma, was chocolate. Got a low roast character. Medium hot bitterness, definitely appropriate for this. And then actually, as it warmed up, the bitterness got, I think, more and more pronounced, which I want to chat about in a minute. No hop flavor. There's a medium degree of sweet ethanol. Again, just like the aroma, the ethanol was present like it should be in a beer this big. But it was present in a good way where that sweet character was there, but it wasn't fusely or harsh. Definitely really well attenuated. Tremendous fermentation. So you did a great job with fermentation on this beer. Great malt between malt and bitterness. And the balance between malt and bitterness. And the finish was long and also very balanced between the two. So I gave that 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 4 out of 5. Body was medium. Lower than expected carbonation, or lower expected body, excuse me. Medium carbonation. Wanted a little bit, and this is maybe unfair to say, I really appreciated the attenuation, but the body I thought at the same time was maybe a little lower than I wanted for this beer. So it's kind of a conundrum with Russian Imperial Stout. It's 1 point, so I feel a little bad about that, but I still gave you a good, really good score for this beer overall. Creamy, a little slight astringency. I think it was maybe mainly from the hot bitterness, but I got a little astringency in the finish. 8 out of 10 for overall impression for a total score of 39. Thought it was a really excellent job getting a beer this big to be so well attenuated. It's dangerously easy drinking. I was talking about the bitterness, and Brian and I were having a discussion about this before the show. My first impression as it warmed up was this is a really bitter beer. And then I looked at the style guidelines, and the IBUs allowable in this beer are up to 90, and that's, you know, Imperial IPA territory. This is not a beer. People think of a Russian Imperial Stout as malt-focused, and I think people usually do because the tendency is to cellar these, and the hop bitterness, the hop character kind of goes away and settles down.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, maybe this is perhaps a younger example or something, but this is 90 IBUs. That's a hell of a lot of IBUs. And it's okay for this beer to be a bitter beer.
Sure.
Which is why I ended up, you know, I love this show. It kind of forces me to go back and review some of the details. And sometimes you think, oh, I know everything. And you know, nobody ever knows everything. And it kind of forces me to go back and look at the numbers. Thought really well done, man. 39 out of 50. I would drink several of these. And you would be peeling me off of your living room floor, and your wife would be all upset about, why is Brian sleeping on my living room floor? You have to throw me in my car, and I would have to do that drive of shame in the morning, and it would just be bad.
Yeah. And the overall impression, too, for the style, it does say, a warming, bittersweet finish. You know, it's kind of, it's part of the style, is having that bitter with the sweet. You need something to balance all that alcohol.
Yeah.
And big malt and strength. Yeah, it's just crazy. Oh, man. Nice rundown,
yeah,
Brian.
Thank you.
Nice rundown.
All right, Mr. Cooper.
All right.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
I just can't get my bearings. I'm sitting here. I can see the screen with the waveforms on it. And I can see the back of JP's. They don't have the cameras on here in the studio. But
no. So it's really interesting.
Really discombobulated. My head is on backwards right now.
I have faith that you will compete and you'll do great.
Okay. Imperial Stout. I got in the nose a deep, again, big chocolatey malt like Brian got right up front. Only faint roast, low smooth alcohol, and then a lot of raisin and plum and kind of sherry-like venison notes in there. But yeah, big kind of malt fruitiness, but like aged malt fruitiness to me. No DMS or diacetyl. I'm not getting any obvious hop aromas in there. Seemed like a clean ale fermentation, but it's almost a little booze-like, and in a way, some of the, you know, lacking the roast, lacking some of the sharpness, and even with the alcohol just being so smooth in the nose, it just seems a bit kind of dulled or maybe even, you know, oxidized, getting those of course, you know, different kinds of oxidation. It's not like a papery, cardboardy oxidation, but I'm getting some definite oxidized notes in the sherry-like impression. Appearance-wise, it's a nice deep brown color, a very low, light tan head. That faded fairly soon after pouring, and that's allowable for the style. It's got a lot of alcohol in it, and it'll kill your head a bit, but it could stick around a little bit better. It's mostly fine bubbles, kind of the light tan colored head in there. The beer's dark, but you can see at the corners it does appear to be fairly clear. It's not a hazy haze monster. Flavor-wise, I got a rich, rich maltiness, obviously. Just deep chocolate and plum and tandem kind of playing off each other. It seemed, Brian thought maybe it was, there is substantial bitterness there, I will say. It's a fairly bitter beer, probably from a lot of those dark malts in there, but it seems aged to me with a kind of a light sherry-like flavor in there, too. But yeah, surprising bit of bitterness from coming from the malts for sure, but probably some from hop bittering hop additions as well, I would guess. But yeah, it the finish is interesting because it finishes with the impression of sweetness just from the chocolatey malt and the alcohol sweetness that's there.
Yeah,
but Brian's right; it is fairly dry beer and well attenuated for this style. And sometimes with a beer like this, it's hard to tell. You can get a beer that finished at 10:30, but it's bold enough and big enough that it tastes just fine because it finished where it needed to finish, and it's not, you know, it started at 11:20 or something, and then, you know, finished down where it needed to finish, and it's fine, just percentage wise on the attenuation. But this seems like it's gone a little further than most. It's balanced in the malt, clean fermentation. But I'm getting kind of a bit of a woody, a little boozy or woody element in the aftertaste that hints at there being like either some barrel aging or some booze element in there. And it could just be booziness from the alcohol. I wouldn't say that alcohol is exceedingly hot or anything, but it is a little prickly and biting. And that's maybe more in the mouthfeel, but it's beefy, and it does say hey. Hey,
hello.
How you doing? Yeah. Full bodied in the mouthfeel, quite warming all the way down the throat, but yeah, also somewhat kind of biting and intense. There's a little hint of astringency in there, not a whole lot, and it's not super creamy. I would say the carbonation is low, medium low kind of territory. But yeah, overall, it's a clean imperial stout. Just about all the desired elements in there, except I would probably like a little more roast in there with the chocolate, just to have it be a little more multidimensional in the malt flavors, and kind of back off some of that heat somehow. But it's going to be hard to avoid it. It's odd because the alcohol is smooth, but especially in the mouthfeel and without all the other kind of malt characteristics there to play off of it, it's poking out a little bit in an interesting way that's kind of like, yep, it's right there, hello. So again, a little more roast, less biting, less well, you know, the bitterness is probably fine if you get some fresh kind of roast flavors in there, but yeah, the strong pruny fruitiness is though not unpleasant at all, it does pull it back a bit into a little more dulled, less kind of classic fresh. You know, sometimes these age differently, and I think this one is, you know, if it's aged as I'm assuming it is, you know, it tastes or as I know it is, it's sat on JP's countertop for a year.
Yeah. That's just good about aging right there.
It tastes like a wood aged one for some reason. It's coming across that way with the booze and the fruitiness and just kind of the two dimensions of the chocolate and the fruity, you know, sherry like stuff playing off each other. It's a really fun beer to taste. So I gave it a 35, and I thought it was very pleasant. I just it could go a different direction, and I'd be interested to taste it fresher. I like some that are aged, but I like a good fresh imperial stout too, and it's nice and smooth. And then, but yeah, well. Maybe if you've brewed another one since, send us a fresh one and get it directly to JP, and we'll give you his address here right over the air.
For sure.
It's kind of a miracle we didn't drink this at your Christmas party, I think, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Colin, do you have any questions for the guys? I'm assuming you do.
It was actually a wood-aged beer.
Okay.
Ding, ding.
We were guessing that vanilla was a giveaway.
Yeah. I think it would score better if you did enter it as a wood-aged beer for me, because I was getting so much of that kind of flavor. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What did you do to age it?
I soaked about 4 ounces of oak cubes in Pendleton whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just shoved them up in the corner of my house for a while until I brewed that beer. And then I dumped the whole thing in there. So it's got 2 cups of whiskey in it too, so that might be adding to the booziness.
Yeah, and the beer makes a lot more sense to me now. Thank you.
Agreed. That's why I got a total bourbon character in the aroma, and this is like a 40-plus point wood-aged beer, I think.
Yeah,
that's
really
nice. It's funny you should say that too, because it took gold medal at the state fair last year.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
But it only scored like 33.
That'll happen.
And then it went on to round two at NHC, mm-hmm. and it didn't score very well at all in round two, but it scored 34 in wood-aged at NHC round one.
Nice.
Wow, yeah. No, it's a really nice beer. And as it would age, you definitely, I agree with Brian, it's going to add about five more points because it all of a sudden makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything that's supposed to be there is there. And it's, yeah, this is definitely a wood-aged imperial stout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
with booze.
It adds on to the, this is a really well-made beer. And that knowing that just adds to it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Any questions for the guys on what they said, or anything that you want to kind of clarify?
Oh yeah, do you have the recipe?
You want to give us
that?
If you don't mind.
I do have the recipe. This was a partial mash.
Okay.
Really?
So I did 10 pounds of extract.
Liquid or dry?
Liquid extract. And then I did 3.5 pounds of RAR 2-row, a pound of Crystal 120, a pound of Karastan, half pound of brown, half pound of chocolate, and 4 ounces of roasted barley. And then for the creaminess, I added almost 2 pounds of flaked oats.
What was your batch size? 5 gallons?
Yeah, this is 5 gallons.
Okay.
Yeah, nicely done.
Yeah, this is a. I could get totally drunk on this beer. It's really good, and we could drink a lot of this stuff, man.
Any?
I like to hear that.
Do we have any? Brian's like holding the unopened bottle out to me, like, "Hey, you want to get started right now, bro?"
Do you have any suggestions for him or anything like that, or kind of just do it again? I mean, what would you change in this?
I think a little roast would play off the other things that are in there too. You know, and a little more of the roasted barley, maybe.
Okay.
I agree. I like the chocolate focus, and I would keep the chocolate focus because that's just how I like to brew. But yeah, a little more roast would, I think, would benefit you. And then entering it, like Brian was saying, entering this in the wood-aged category would definitely help you a few points. I mean, this is a category killer, you know, potential best-of-show beer. If you enter this as wood-aged, you maybe bump up even, you know, 25% of that roast malt. This is really good job, man.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Excellent.
All right. Maybe back off just a touch on the booze myself, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a little booze forward, especially, you know, after this long, but
25%, you think 25% back, 50%?
Something like that. I mean, different judges, I mean, I prefer it to just be in balance with the style, and mm-hmm. to me, it's like coming out over the top and taking away from some of the other elements of the style. You might taste more of the roast, you might taste more of the other elements of the malt in there if it wasn't so strong on the booze, but... It's kind of fun the way it is, okay. too.
Although, here's what I'm going to say. Because, you know, now that we're both grandmasters, we're going to have a candid discussion about stuff.
There we go.
If we're going to tell you to enter this as wood-aged, you're going to get judged on the character of the wood-aging. And I think having something super boozy where it's like, oh, God, all I'm drinking is whiskey, that's one thing. But I think it's not going to hurt you to have this degree of soaked oak chips in a wood-age style, because that tells the judges, hey, look, this was aged in a barrel that had booze in it. And I feel like if you back off too much, you might as well have entered it again back in Russian Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird things about competition, right? Because you declare a thing is supposed to be there, like a wood-aged character. It needs to be perceptibly there, or you're going to get dinged for not having it. Now, yeah. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah. Okay, so maybe not 25% back, maybe just 10% or something. Just that little edge.
Not a whole lot.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Okay. All right.
Well, yeah, brew that one again for sure.
Oh, hell yeah, and send that to us and let us give you a 45. And more to the point, let us just like drink a lot of this and have a really boozy show. It'll be the second, right. It'll
sounds
be the second
great.
Show.
Yeah. Anything else, Colin?
Next time I'll have to sit in with you guys.
Yeah, come on over.
Come on down, man.
We're here. All right, man. we'll let you go if that's it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. All right, man.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Colin.
Thanks a lot. Bye,
guys.
That was a fun beer.
All right.
That was really good.
Yeah. Finally got those beers off my counter.
Out of the sunlight in your front window there.
That's true. Hey, if you want to learn more about the microbes responsible for making sour and farmhouse beers, you can join the White Labs people at their San Diego facility or online through their live webcast March 12th. For their Sour Beer Essentials Workshop. This class will explore the finer points of fermenting sour beer, intricacies of handling the yeast and bacteria, the history and traditions of the beers, and so much more. For more information, head to whitelabs.com/education. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. And then we're going to talk about, I think, a Hefeweizen, right, Brian? Did we figure it out?
Yeah, we're going to Weizen, yeah.
All right, cool. All right, hang on. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right. Thanks for hanging on, everybody. I know it was a pain to wait for so long, but I'm copying and pasting the wrong phone number, but that's all right. I'll just cut all this out, and no one will ever know. No one will ever know.
We're just going to call some random numbers and see if anybody homebrews. Hey!
Is there a homebrewer in the house?
Yeah. Is anyone here familiar with homebrewing? Hello. Hi.
All right.
There we go. All right. We're going to get E on the line here. Talk some Hefeweizen. And, like that.
All right, so let's, Ian.
We're getting him.
So is this where we go from the dead air standpoint?
There we go.
We talk about rumble, rumble, rumble.
Ian, how you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Perfect, perfect. Hey. We're just hanging out, getting ready to talk about your half, man.
Cool, man.
Is this something you've made before? Not many people make Hefeweizen, really. You know what I mean?
I know. Weird. I don't even really like Hefeweizen, but It was sort of. I watched a presentation at NHC back like 4 or 5 years ago, and they were talking about, you can make a half, turn a half in like 7 days, or you can really get after it, have complicated mash schedules, fermentation schedules, and make excellent half. So I kind of got intrigued and decided to try to do that.
Okay, yeah. And what did you think of the process? Are you something you like to do? Did you have fun with it? The end result, or was it just a thing that you can tick off the list?
A little bit of both. It's fun. I have a nice Blickman setup, so I can do like step mashes and decoctions and such. So this is a good excuse to kind of do that. It was a shitload of work though, so I don't know if I would necessarily do it again.
Right. Okay, that's fair enough, man. And how long have you been homebrewing?
Probably, I think it's been like 12 years now.
Oh, geez. Okay, so you've know what you're doing.
Well, I brew like 3 or 4 times a year.
Oh, me too,
just
dude.
It's so much work.
Yeah.
So 12 years times 4. So
I got you. We can do the math then, I guess.
Brew smaller batches. Yeah. I'm going to start doing that myself.
Me too. All right, Brian.
Yeah.
Mr. Okay. Cooper, let's go.
Yeah, the Weiss beer. These are, for such a simple seeming style, it's just a wheat beer. It has a long tradition, and it's more complicated than one might think, so... first of all, the labels were nice. It's always a nice touch. There was like a crown thing on the label, I don't have the bottle here, but yeah. So anyway, nice looking label there. And when I opened the bottle, it had a strong hiss and it foamed slightly out the neck there. So I was like, okay, it's nice and spritzy. So. I wondered if maybe there was something going on that got away in there, but in the end, I don't think that was the case. It's just very highly carbonated. In the nose, I got a medium-high clove-like phenol with medium-low banana esters. The bananas were pretty subdued, but it was in there. Faint floral hop note as well. It's a nice bready, malt character. Hints of yeastiness blended in. No diacetyl or DMS. It's very clean. Appearance-wise, it pours a massive white mousse-like foam stand with striations of some kind of light tan, maybe yeast or something, kind of suspended on the top. And it laces the glass, had excellent head retention. Color-wise, the beer is a yellow gold and hazy as expected for the non-Kristallweizen version. And the flavor, there's again a pleasant banana medium high level, and the clove seemed low, so it kind of was a little bit reversed from the aroma, which was a little odd, but I just went with it. And very low bitterness as expected. It's a low spicy floral hop in there, but nothing too intense. Very clean fermentation and balanced to that yeast character with the clove and banana. But not too strong on that. You know, sometimes you got to be real careful with fermenting these, or you get way too much banana.
Yeah, they can get hot. Away from you, dude, for sure.
Yeah. So the malt is low and kind of just generally bready and unassuming in there. The banana and clove lingered in the aftertaste. There were some hints of alcohol in there, too. That was kind of interesting. Just a bit odd in there, and it had a fairly dry finish. So mouthfeel wise, it's a smooth feeling beer overall. Just all that good yeast and wheat and everything in there just smooths right down and goes down easy. So a medium body, no astringency or obvious warmth. The carbonation was high, and I was impressed, how much carbonation you kept in that bottle. So I'd love to talk about your filling technique and give other people some tips that listen to us on how to do a beer that's supposed to be well carbonated in a bottle filling for competition. That's something that people can really benefit from, because a lot of times they miss it. Quite creamy and just mouth filling, so the mouthfeel was pretty nice for the style. Overall, I thought it was a very nicely brewed Bavarian Hefeweizen. Had a lot of the style elements. It was interesting that the banana was a little low in the aroma, and then in the reverse in the flavor it was a little higher. But it was still very the whole picture was pretty pleasant to me. I don't know if it's. I'd like to know. Maybe it's bottle conditioned. I'm not sure. Really determine, but it was okay.
It was bottle conditioned.
Now it's only the tractors really that the kind of odd scuzz floating on the surface of the foam.
Scuzz is never good.
I don't want to put scuzz on a score sheet, but I did. Sorry. It's but it could offend some judges to just see that, and it may be from the bottle conditioning if you're looking at it that way. And so. The very faint alcoholic note was a little odd too, but good job, I think, with the water and too with the overall smoothness of the beer. So a lot to like here. I actually gave it a 38, and I think Brian and I are going to have some discussing to do, but I really liked this beer, and I'm interested to hear what he has to say about it too. So it kind of hit a lot of the marks for a Weiss beer, and I know that style. It's not my absolute favorite German beer either, but it was. I couldn't find a lot to knock it for, other than those few little odd things. So nice job.
Cool, thank you.
All right, did you score them? Did I miss it?
I gave it a 38.
Yeah. Okay, wow, that's pretty good. All right, Brian Shar, go ahead, please, my friend.
All right, so I'm going to preface this by saying that Hefeweizen is one of my absolute favorite beer styles. Really love Hef. I've been to Germany. I get Hef in Germany the handful of times I've been. Francis Connor is probably my favorite, and I'm more of one that prefers the banana to the spice. And having said that, I think I have – I mean, judges have to be aware of their own limitations and their own sensitivities, and I think that I tend to have – a bit of a sensitivity to the plastic type of phenol.
Phenolic, yeah.
And it's, you know, phenols, you know, the chlorophenols. This Hefeweizen's a style that the yeast is supposed to throw phenol. You're supposed to get clove character out of that. And I think that I tend to perceive the clove more as plastic at a lower threshold than most people. So I tend to prefer perhaps the banana ones for that banana-oriented Hefeweizens for that reason.
That doesn't surprise, I think, anybody.
That I'm weird? That
you would like banana-heavy beer.
Can you get me a banana daiquiri
while
we're doing this, maybe? That'd be nice.
No, bananas are gross.
Do you have some of that, like Captain Morgan with the banana?
I have.
What's that, Rum Fire? Give me some Rum Fire.
No, that's not Rum Fire. Let's not talk about Rum Fire.
That's a different show. All right, so aroma. I thought the aroma had a very strong plastic/phenol content without a lot of banana. Again, you can have – Hefeweizens can be more clove or more banana or balanced. They're all within style.
Yeah.
I thought the balance was more toward the spice/plastic, though. Didn't get any hop aroma. There was a slight banana character, as Brian mentioned. Light wheat malt character is perceptible. Gave it a 7 of 12. Appearance, color was straw with a slight haze, but generally clear. And I didn't roll the bottle. And I hate the BJCP guidelines for Hefeweizens. Gordon, if you're listening to me.
Me too.
Gordon, Jamil, everyone, good Lord. I mean, no one ever says, you should roll the bottle. Don't roll the bottle. And you get to competition and people are like, should we roll the bottle? I don't know. The entrant didn't say, no, we should roll the bottle. No, don't roll the bottle. And it's so stupid and it makes me so unhappy. And it's unnecessarily complicated. We need to just come up with a, you have to do this or don't do this. And this is not your fault. This is my complaint about the guidelines.
Yeah.
And it's been a complaint of mine for 10 years about this rolling the bottle nonsense for halves.
Well, to argue against that, like if you get order a bottled Hefeweizen in Germany, you know, they'll swirl that last bit and flip the thing upside down and put it in your glass.
No, I hear you.
Right?
I hear you.
I mean, so that's like rolling the bottle. So I would say it's fine to roll the bottle
then
myself.
That should be in the guidelines, and though, that you should always do that and dump the yeast out. Though,
I think
right?
It's up to the competition manager. So, you know, just, you know, each one can kind of do it their own way. But, yeah, getting all that in suspension is you know, there should be a protocol or like a little more definition around that maybe. So, yeah.
I that's, you know, that's not your problem. This is us having a discussion about that. The head was heroic and long-lasting. Really liked the head. It was classic wheat beer. Oh, my God, this is a gigantic head beer. Overall, 2 out of 3 for appearance. Flavor, that the flavor initially was spice/plastic phenol with some wheat malt and a hint of banana. Very well attenuated. Low hop bitterness, which is what you want from the style. No hop flavor, again, classic for the style. Finish was definitely malty and focused on the wheat. Gave that a 10 of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 of 5. Body was full. High carbonation, definitely. You know, carbonation, really well done. It's hard.
Yeah.
So many beers in competition are low carb, especially if they're filled off a keg. And to have a high-carb beer actually have high carbonation is really, really refreshing and nice. More perky than creamy, no warming, no astringency. Again, 5 out of 5. Overall impression, it's a well-made beer in a difficult style. And I'm going to go off on a tangent just for a second. I think Hefeweizen, for a style that, as you put it, not a lot of people necessarily brew anymore. There's like 7 different yeasts you can get for this thing. And I'm always like, really? There's so many choices. And this is one of those styles where a lot of homebrew is pretty forgiving about temperature range. Not necessarily high temperature excursions early in fermentation, but especially ales, they're pretty forgiving as long as you can keep it within a certain, you know, moderate range. In my experience, Hefeweizen, if you're more – that bell curve of fermentation, that's like a 3-degree bell curve. And if you get out of that range for a particular yeast, you end up with really real plastic, real phenol. Again, in my experience dealing with this stuff. And it's hard – it's really hard to make this beer. just because of that reason. And you have to not just be able to control fermentation temperature, but be able to control the fermentation temperature in that very tight range that specific yeast likes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they tend, the further you drift from that for a strain, it tends to become a plastic bomb. So there's a great book from AHA called Wheat Beers, and I forget the author. And the author actually has an appendix at the end where he had gone through and sort of experimentally determined like that tight band for each of these yeasts. And
wow,
that's something I like to consult. If you don't have that book and you like to make this stuff, if you made it once as a lark, don't even worry about it. If you want to make this again, I would consider getting that book.
It's Hieronymus, Stan Hieronymus.
Hieronymus, okay. Brewing
with wheat. Yeah, that was one of the references I looked at when I was researching for this beer.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's to the extent you can temp control that fermentation tightly within the optimum for that yeast strain, try to do that. But this is just this. Yeah, and I'll tell you, I tell you this from experience. I made my first wheat beer. I totally randomly locked in on the right temperature, and it was great. And we drank this 5-gallon keg in like a weekend. We had people over at the house, and I spent 15 years chasing that beer.
You tried.
I fermented it in my garage in the summer at 110. I fermented cold. I listened to that mommily about, if you want banana, you have to go really hot. It's like, fuck it. It's going to be in my garage. It's going to be July. Okay. I'm making this. I'm standing. I'm sweating literally out of my garage or out of my backyard, boiling this wort. Think, I'm putting this in my garage. It's going to be 110. It's going to be, but no banana. It was all plastic.
That first pine, you're like, no.
I listened to all of the, you have to under pitch to get banana. No, it was plastic. And it's all just getting that temperature range right. And it's so devilishly hard. This is a simple beer, but it's so complex to make. And there's a lot of stuff you've got to kind of master to do it. And I think you did a – it's not perhaps as much to my personal liking as it could have been, but I think it was well done. So maybe a little hard on it, and you know, I think it was a well-made beer.
I agree, though. The mouthfeel was pretty spot on. You know, both Brian and I really liked the mouthfeel of this beer.
Yes.
It had that mouthfeeling, creamy smoothness, and just right. I may prefer a less banana forward Weizen, and I didn't pick up a lot of medicinal quality or plasticky quality in the phenol, but that to me it was just kind of clove like, maybe a little sharp, a little prickle or a little bite to it, but not like big medicinal or plastic phenolic. So yeah, that's but yeah, everybody perceives a little differently. And thresholds for some of these compounds are, you know, different tasters have different points where they can pick them up. So I would have to say I feel like I'm fairly in tune with phenolics myself, but yeah.
I think it's a sensory issue like cilantro, like how some people hate it at any concentration. Everyone will perceive cilantro at some concentration as ham or soap. And that threshold of what that concentration is highly idiosyncratic, and it really depends on your own taste buds and DNA. And I think that my threshold for where clove becomes plastic is a lot lower than most people. I think it's the source of our 10-point difference.
Yeah. No, but I think
that makes sense.
Gets a fair shake. What do you think? Yeah. Did we do okay,
Ian? Ian, you got any questions for everybody?
Yeah, no.
How are
great.
You?
It's funny. I entered this in a competition, and I've given it out to a bunch of people since I had it bottled. And the reason I sent it to you guys was because I got it back. You know, I thought it was like, you know, a decent beer, like in the, you know, the 30s, mid-30s maybe, based upon, you know, the stuff I had tasted. But get the results back for the competition, it was like a 22. And the competition never sent out score sheets. And I was like, wow, that's not very good.
No,
I started
man.
Giving them to friends, and all friends were like, well, bro, it's too carbonated, man. It's way too carbonated. And people were like, I get a sour character. And so everyone I gave it to, nobody liked it. And I got like terrible reviews in general. So,
oh, no.
You know, getting some honest feedback from you guys has been good. So yeah. I agree. I think the carbonation is good. I read some articles that it should be between like, This is 3.8 volumes.
You did a great job on carbonation, man. Excellent job.
Yeah, we can tell you paid attention. Yeah. Maybe I was a little nice to it, you know, but I thought it fit the style, and I, yeah.
do you guys think like it would do better? So I'll probably enter this in NHC here coming up soon. If it happens to slide through into the second round, if it was a rebrew, would you guys, you know, you were talking about fermentation temperature and importance of fermentation temperature. Would you ramp the temperature up more or ramp it down? This was fermented at like pitched at 58, risen to 62 over 5 days. And then I went from 62 to 67 for the next like 7 days. Would you guys go hotter than that?
I think I would go higher or, earlier. Yeah, get more I would, esters.
I would go tighter. That's a real wide band for Hef. I would whip out that Wheat Beers book, find out what's that optimum temperature for what flavor you want to get out of that beer, and I would try to maintain that real tight within like 2-3 degrees of that peak either direction and not let that drift 10 degrees.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Makes sense to me. Anything else for Ian?
What was your recipe there?
There we go.
Oh, recipe. So 50-50 Bohemian floor malted wheat from Weyermann and Weyermann pills.
Pills, yeah.
And it was all Hallertau, a 60-minute addition for 11 IBUs, and then a ridiculous single decoction.
Wow. That
took up half the day where it was like, you know, dough in at like 104, rise to 111 for the brulic acid rest, ramp to 131, ramp to 149, pull a decoction to 158, then to 212 for 10 minutes, add it back to the main mash, ramp to 158, and then mash out at 170.
You know, so it was. I'm going to be heretical here. I'm going to say skip the ferulic acid mash point because that's just going to make you have more clove. Mm-hmm. And I would just say skip it.
Okay. Just because of that, of the clove kind of maybe presenting as those plastic flavors like you were talking about?
Yeah, and I don't know. Brian, what do you think about that? I've never done a ferulic acid mash step myself, but I don't know. Do you have an opinion on that?
It might not be absolutely necessary. Yeah, you're still going to get some clove, but sometimes you get wheat beers that don't have hardly any clove or banana, and then it's just like, well, what is this?
You know, it's an American. Right. At least it had some phenolics in it, damn it.
Right. All right, Ian. Well, hey, man, if that's it, we'll let you go.
Cool, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks, dude.
Thank you.
Many thanks, yeah. You can tell you paid attention to that beer, so that's,
yes.
You know, I really appreciate it when you can tell this guy knows what it's supposed to be and did a pretty good job.
Absolutely.
But, no, I totally agree, and I feel like I was maybe a little harsh on it just because of my own sensory biases.
Well, you're mean. You're a mean dude.
Yeah. I'm an asshole. What can I say?
That's true. Speaking of changing your malt, you guys, More Beer wants to change your malt game with the Viking malt. It comes from Northern Europe, and it's family-owned. It's a family-owned malt house since 1883, the largest specialty malt producer in the world. Their base malts are malted from Nullox varietals that do not contain the enzyme lipooxygenase, which leads to trans-2-nonyl in beer, which is responsible for stale cardboard flavors. So head over to morebeer.com and brew with ingredients from the future. And then in the meantime, while you're doing that, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back, we're going to give stuff away, and then we're going to leave. So hang tight. This is Dr. Homebrew, and you're not, I guess.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit fivestarchemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019. And get the five-star treatment today.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All Hey, thanks for sticking around, everybody. Before we get to start giving stuff away, I'm going to remind you guys about our good friends at iDip, which is the Smart Brew Water Testing Kit. It incorporates a revolutionary photometer system, which is the first and only one on the market with its own app. You can use it for home or commercial use, so if you're planning on opening a brewery at some point, you can just go ahead and buy your water tester now, man. Use it at home. Transfers up. It scales up to the new brewery. It's pretty good, and it's the only meter on the market that runs water tests with no math on your part. Nobody likes math. Even people who do math, nobody likes math. So
I like math.
You don't like math. And Brian conveniently is playing the cuckoo sound effects. Didn't that come from your phone?
No, that was my phone.
Oh, it was Brian's phone. Well,
I need to silence that.
It was good timing. Perfect. It has the ability to test over 40 different water quality tests. Four already come preloaded, and you can buy more. You can buy access to more, like total alkalinity tests, chloride tests, calcium hardness, pH, sulfate, and more. And you only need 4 mils of water for each test. So check it out. Go to smartbrewkit.com. Enter code TBN10 at checkout, and you can save $10 on either the standard or advanced Smart Brew testing kit. All right, Brian Cooper, who wins what, dude? Let's give some grog tag gift certificate away. Let's give a $40 grog tag gift certificate away to the one with the, quote, worst score.
Now, our friend Ian already had some cool labels on his beer, but he does win the grog tag this time. So,
Ian, all right, good job, dude.
He can put those cool labels on a cooler substrate.
Yeah.
Ian.
Or make a sign for his garage, like a metal sign with the crown on it.
That'd be real nice.
That'd be good. All right, guys. I don't know. My voice sucks, so I'm going to end this right now.
You're going to end it all right now?
I'm going to end it all right now.
Okay.
That's going to be a YouTube video with like a million hits, dude. You're going to be posthumously famous.
There's nothing else we had to talk about, right, Brian? That was it.
No, I think did we wrap up all our live reads and
Widgemuts?
And
I think so. Hey, everybody, if you're digging through past podcasts and you want to check out more stuff like this, well, just go ahead and let this one play out and click the next one. If not, if you want to change it up a little bit, you can check us out on The Session, Heads and Tails, which is a really good podcast all about spirits. A whole bunch of stuff happening here on the Brewer Network, so you don't have to go anywhere. And, like that. All right, everybody. Until next time, we'll see you later.
All right.